Well, I'm very happy to welcome back. It's been a lonely week, Matthew. I've had no guests.
Oh, no.
How unlike you. It's so nice to have someone to talk to here on Thursday. I'm with Matthew Fries, and if you don't know that name, you will very soon. Matthew Fries was appointed to the faculty at Western Michigan University as a jazz piano professor, just this last September.
Yeah.
Filling in for the shoes of Jeremy Siskind, who left pretty late last year. So
there's a bit of a
scramble to find someone, and boy, did they find someone.
Thanks. Yeah, it's been amazing. It's been an amazing experience.
Well, we're here to cover a few of your activities this weekend, because you've put a lot of things together with some great friends, and that means great music here in Kalamazoo.
Yeah. I have a good friend of mine from New York, Phil Palombi, who I've collaborated with on a bunch of projects. He's a great bass player, New York bass player, Grammy Award winning. He's currently, you know, we had to pull him away from a tour with Manhattan Transfer and Michael Feinstein. And, you know, we kind of caught him between some of these things.
Sounds like he's in demand.
He is in demand. we managed to get him to come out here for the weekend. Actually, for a little while, he's here doing some shows this weekend with myself and Keith Hall, the drum and tech instructor here at Western, and also a good friend of mine from when he lived in New York. And we have a band together, Tri-Fi.
Right. Yeah, so. You have to say more than good friend when you've recorded 5 albums.
That's true.
It's like lifetime.
That's right. Yes, that's been about 12 years now we've been working together with this project. So having him come to town, we're doing a couple of shows with that band. And then he's going to stay around and work with Keith Hall on his drum camp next week, work with some of the young drummers in the area. So that should be really exciting for them. And while we had him here, I managed to also get us on the Overneath Studios KBR sessions, which is going to be a live duo recording, just the two of us. So it's going to be very intimate and very just acoustic, and just a real small audience in a listening space, and that incredible piano they have there. So,
yeah, this is the one I want listeners to hear. the KBR sessions is a semi-regular live recording session at Overneath Studios, where the audience is invited to sit and watch as musicians record, often resulting in a released album. So your presence there can make a real difference to how the whole session goes. And luckily, there are two chances to see this happen. One is at 6 o'clock and one is at 8 o'clock Friday evening.
Friday evening, right.
That's tomorrow.
It is tomorrow. That's right.
Friday night, downtown Kalamazoo at Overneath Studios. And as you said, it's a lovely space. Mm-hmm. And the instrument you're playing on is a well-maintained, probably a Steinway.
Yeah, it's a Steinway concert grand. It belongs to the Kalamazoo Symphony.
Wow.
I guess it was donated to them anonymously, is what I've heard. I'm getting all this. I'm talking like I know the history. I've only been
here
for Matthew, a year.
But you're doing pretty well on your Kalamazoo lore already after only 9 months.
And so, you know, the symphony uses it for their concerts that need a piano 3 or 4 times a year. And the rest of the time it lives in this recording studio where it's, you know, maintained and used for recordings and performances like this. So it's a pretty great opportunity for, that the symphony has offered up for this. So
it's good to find the resources you need when you need them.
Yeah.
Because Kalamazoo is pretty special that way, with the focus on performing arts and other arts as well. I always feel like I'm leaving out so many great activities we have here, but music especially has been a centerpiece of culture in Kalamazoo. So yes, there are instruments available, there are venues available, and for artists like yourself, which it's such a treat to have living here, I'm so glad that you can really hook up some performing opportunities for us to get to know you as well, because once we get to know you, we consider you ours.
That's right. There's no going back, right?
Yeah. You can learn more about Matthew in concert at Overneath. That's tomorrow at 6 p.m. and 8 p.m. with Phil Palombi on bass. Mm-hmm. Piano and bass duo sounds lovely. What we're going to hear now, though, is piano alone, right? That's from your latest recording?
Yeah, I did a project, I guess it's been 2 years now since it was officially out. I'm trying to remember exactly the date. But my sister, speaking of the other arts, my sister is a visual artist and wow. lives in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Was a mother of three working as a nurse and, doing a little painting on the side. And at some point just was like, I need to be creating art and that needs to be what I do. And basically quit her job and opened a gallery downtown and is doing really well, creating some beautiful work. And I was visiting her and we were just kind of talking. I had this plan to create this solo piano album of my own music. And was talking to her about it and asked her if she would be willing to create some art for the cover. I just thought that would be a nice gesture.
Yeah, what a connection.
Right? And so we ended up she said then, I will need to hear all the tracks so that I can try to create something that is inspired by your music. And we kind of talked about that whole idea of what inspires your art, and what inspires my music, what inspires her visual art. And we decided to take this kind of a step further and make it a collaborative project all the way. And so as I was writing songs, as I was composing things for this album, if I composed a new piece, I would record a little quick version of it on my piano at home and I would email it to her. And then she would just kind of put it on loop and start creating some art. And then she was working on a series of art as well, a particular thing, and she would create something new and send it to me, and I would, borrow from the images of it or the title or whatever and try to write some music that it's not like, it's music without words and it's abstract art. So it's not, there's no like real, oh, it's a cloud or it's a little kitten,
You can take it either way.
Yeah. So it really kind of gets at a deeper level of what is the inspiration and where does it come from? So it was an interesting project and it's, an interesting experience for both of us to kind of do this.
I would like to hear a track called The Sweet Life. Can you tell us what image or just experience came with this?
Well, this one is this is one that she sent me a some artwork for, with the title "It's Time to Make the Donuts," and I thought, there's no way I'm writing a song called "It's Time to Make the Donuts." I'm sorry, Lauren. There's no way I'm doing that. But what I, so I just kind of twisted a little bit and made it The Sweet Life, and I also kind of was at the same time thinking that I wanted to try to write something that is that feels a little more like a traditional old jazz standard, more of a like a real song form. And in this case, it's just very, it's a 32-bar AABA song form, but with a twist that it is in a couple of different keys. So it's a little bit unusual at the same time. So
my guest is Matthew Fries, and he is performing at Overneath Studios in KBR Sessions. These are live recordings with an audience. You're invited to join Mr. Fries and Phil Palombi at 6 p.m. and 8 p.m. tomorrow downtown on the Mall at the Overneath Studios. Here's The Sweet Life from the album Parallel States. Thank you. That's A Sweet Life, a piece by Matthew Freese, who is my guest here this morning on WMUK. And we are counting down to a number of live appearances locally. Matthew will be performing with Phil Palumbi, bassist, in KBR Sessions downtown at the Overneath Studios. Audiences will be seated at 6 p.m. and then later at 8 p.m. Mm-hmm. And do you have a plan?
Do I have a? That's a very vague question.
You're getting, a premium studio and the chance to make a live recording. So I assume you're not totally winging it. Although I know jazz artists like to do.
There's a little bit of that. I mean, Phil and I have worked together for so many years, and so we just kind of have a bunch of tunes that we like to play together that other people don't play. And then we're also composers, and so we have some original music we'll be playing. And then just being, traditional jazz musicians, we'll play some of the standards too. So it'll be a mix of all of that. I just played duo with him last weekend in New York. There's a club there called Knickerbocker that's just one of those classic piano and bass duo rooms. I've heard so much great music over the years there, Roland Hanna, Harold Mayburn, Mulgrew Miller, James Williams, Donald Brown, Tommy Flanagan, and then playing with, like Ron Carter and I'm drawing a blank, sorry. But just like all these amazing musicians in this little, it's basically a steakhouse that had live music. They had a piano there, and you just kind of could sit for a couple bucks, you'd sit maybe 3 feet away from the piano and just watch these masters play. And so in a way, that's kind of how this thing on Friday is going to feel for me, that it's, we have this intimate audience right there just kind of sharing something that we love to do anyway. We played there last weekend and just kind of played through some stuff and kind of talked about, well, let's play this tune. And then there's some things that I've actually specifically chosen and tried to work out a way that we can do it that will be interesting and fun. And Phil's one of those guys that, if you put a challenge up for him, he just has such a facility on the instrument and makes it look and sound so easy. You can give him like these ridiculous hard parts and he just kind of plays them and makes music out of them and laughs and has fun the whole time. And it's special. So
I think listeners would want to know, are reservations required? Will there be admission charged and things like that?
There are tickets being sold. If you go to, there are two separate shows. It's very affordable. I believe it's $15 for adults and $10 for students. So, and it's kind of a small room, so it's limited seating. So we are selling tickets. There'll be like wine and cheese and stuff in between, and so it's a social event too. And I know the Overneath Facebook page or my Facebook page has a link to it. There's a on my website, matthewfreese.com, right on the homepage, there's a link to the event and where you can buy tickets, or you can just get tickets at the door.
And if you're interested, Freese is spelled F-R-I-E-S.
Yes.
I want to get back to the track we just listened to, and I am going to bust out a really personal question, so sorry about this. So in leading up to listening to that track, you talked about your relationship with your sister, who turned it into a visual artist, and you collaborated on the music and, probably deepened your relationship and, made great new memories together doing this project. I know that your father was a musician. Mm-hmm. Was it ever hard for her to see that connection between you and your father with music, whereas she went another direction and didn't have that?
That's an interesting question, and it is it's a good one. It's personal. It's good. Well, it's a little complicated. But She doesn't have a very good relationship with anybody in our family. She's kind of a bit of the black sheep in a way, and just kind of always has been. And I think, she ended up kind of out on her own. And for me, it's like when she decided to just embrace this being an artist thing, it was such a beautiful transformation, because she had been really underappreciated, and you know, as happens, right? There's, you know, you have these family relationships are so complicated, and there's so many levels and so much baggage, and at some point she just kind of overcame it all and recreated herself, and found this outlet where she was immensely appreciated and could be so creative. And so that was beautiful to see. And, you know, she and I are the two siblings that kind of are connected. I mean, I'm the one person in the family that she really is still connected with. So I'm kind of mumbling and talking in circles here, because that is a bit of a surprise question.
Sorry. I was thinking about family dynamics, knowing, yeah, having my own sister, and just by virtue of being younger, she can be overlooked and things like that. Although she has by far outshone me accomplishment wise. I was tempted to ask, so I did.
Oh, no, I appreciate it. Yeah. And then it's also, you know, modern family. So it's, you know, she's actually a stepsister, and I have a half brother and a real brother, and she has a half brother on the other side. And so it's like that, you know, the modern complicated family and all those, which just adds more, you know, layers of, you know, expectations and conflict and baggage. And, you know, it's.
Well, if people want to see some of her artwork, which is quite compelling, it has a lot of nature imagery in it, but also sort of landscapes that make you a little uneasy. I'm sure. Where could you find her website?
Well, her name is Lauren Spangler Jones, she has a studio, an art studio in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And if you just go to LSJ Studios, I can't remember if it's lsjstudios.com or lsjstudio.com. You'll find her gallery and see some of her work and see some of the work that she's presenting. You know, they have a similar to here. They have how we have the art hop on, you know, the first Fridays of the month. They do that sort of thing there as well. There's a surprisingly large art community in that little Amish city in central Pennsylvania. And you know, she's constantly presenting different things in her gallery for that. So,
well, I know you moved to New York City to perform in the mid-90s by way of Tennessee.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, exactly.
I don't know, Nashville or?
Knoxville. Close. Yeah, I went to the University of Tennessee.
How did you pursue jazz there?
Well, you know, when I was finished undergraduate school, I had gone to Ithaca College in upstate New York, and I just kind of knew I wanted to keep learning. You know, I kind of got to the end of my 4 years, and I was like, I'm not done. I need to keep learning. Took a year off and practiced like a crazy person. Had no social life, just hid in the practice room for hours and hours. And then, you know, started up researching, which we didn't have the internet back then, so it was, you know, getting catalogs from colleges and browsing through them and seeing what you could find. And I sent out letters, you know, to schools asking for information. And University of Tennessee was the one school that they wrote a personal letter back to me. The director of the jazz department there was a guy by the name of Jerry Coker, who, together with Jamie Ebersold and David Baker, were kind of the originators of jazz education in this country. He was at Indiana University years and years ago, and they kind of started this whole movement that has become, you know, such an important thing.
I can see their names printed on texts.
Yeah, yeah. He's written tons of books, and it led camps. And so he wrote me this personal letter just telling me about the program and telling me about their jazz piano teacher that they had there, a guy by the name of Donald Brown, who I hadn't heard of at that point. He's kind of a little bit lesser known name, but he played in the Jazz Messengers with Wynton Marsalis and Branford Marsalis in the 80s. He was with Freddie Hubbard for a while. He just has recorded with everybody. And Wynton Marsalis recorded one of his compositions on on is it on Black Codes for the Underground? One of those records that he did in the 80s, he recorded one of Donald's tunes, and you know, he's a serious heavy musician.
It's kind of an exciting time in our jazz resurgence.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he was a big part of that.
He was a big part of it. And, you know, so I went down and I was like, well, I have to follow through on this. I went down and I met Jerry and I met Donald and had a lesson with Donald, and they offered me an assistantship to come down, and so I just had to do it. And it was the best decision of my life. It was, or one of the best. I can't. I have to be careful what I say. No, but you know, to spend 2 years just basically absorbing what this guy had, like the feel he had when he played music. It was just so deep and soulful and bluesy, and so much history, and such a wide range of influences from, you know, old time stride piano to some of the most modern, you know, McCoy Tyner, Chick Corea, angular out stuff, just kind of blended together into this incredibly original person. So that was a great experience. And he was the one kind of who pushed me towards New York. At one point, you know, I kind of had finished my 2 years there, I had my degree. I was just kind of hanging around Knoxville wondering what to do. And, you know, I took another lesson with him just to try to get some more information, and we're sitting and talking, and he said, you know, you're one of my best students. You know, everything I've thrown at you, you've just taken it and put in extra time and figured out how to make it your own. And, you know, I'm so excited for you. He says, the only thing that's missing from your playing is New York.
What a line.
Right?
But yeah.
But, you know.
You had done all the academics.
Mm-hmm. I had to go and challenge myself. And, you know, whether it's New York or whether it's somewhere else, it's just that idea of going somewhere and absorbing the energy. You know, more than now that I've done the research and I've gotten the information and all that. Now it's about the making it grow into something, you know. And so that's what ended up happening. You know, I moved to New York. A friend of mine was out of town for a couple months and said, "Do you want to sublet my apartment?" And it's
lucky.
I'm like, I'm not sure. Okay, yeah. And I thought, okay, great. I'll go to New York for 2 months. If I hate it, you know, I can go back, you know, and if I love it, then I'll stay. And I ended up staying for about 23, 24 years so, before this opportunity here came up. So.
Yeah. My guest is Matthew Fries. He is the new professor of jazz piano at Western Michigan University. Friendship and more brought him to Kalamazoo. We're really lucky to have you. You're performing in two KBR sessions at Overneath Studios tomorrow with your friend Phil Palumbi. That's at 6 p.m. and 8 p.m. When audiences will be seated and the recording will begin. Details are on Matthew's Facebook page. Matthew Fries is F-R-I-E-S. Mm-hmm. The details also listed at Overneath.
It's also on my website and on the Overneath website. So and there's posters everywhere.
I probably haven't mentioned both of our friend, Keith Hall, enough here.
I don't think you can mention him enough.
No. he, of course, is a tireless advocate for jazz for everyone in West Michigan, from the very youngest players to the oldest folks out there who just love jazz. He is there to connect and bring people together. Why don't you tell us again when you'll be performing with Keith and Phil on the next weekend here?
Well, the first one is tonight. We're playing at Union, right downtown. Yeah.
Okay. Head down to the Union. All right.
Yeah, we're playing at the Union tonight. That starts at 7. And then Saturday night we're playing at a room called Potter's Lounge in the Sheraton.
Yeah, that's a newer venue, so folks, you have to head out to...
It's on Sprinkle? I'm still learning my way around town, so I just like saying that name.
Yeah,
Sprinkle Road.
It's just off of the highway at the Sheraton,
yeah.
And they have a very welcoming space there for music.
And they have music there every weekend now, right? They have a series of things happening, so...
Yep, another new venue.
Another venue here in Kalamazoo.
Yeah. Pick another song for us here. This is the album Staring Into the Sun.
Why don't we check out, it's the fifth track on here, actually. It's a tune, another tune that I wrote, and it's entitled Airstream.
After and the trailer?
It kind of is. I had, there's this, is it Tim Robbins, the author? Is that what his name? Yeah.
Yeah.
He has a book, Skinny Legs and All, where there's this image of this, I guess it was the character's name, Boomer, who's an artist, and he ends up, he has an Airstream camper, and he's an artist as well, and he ends up welding these big giant chicken legs on the side of, big giant aluminum chicken legs on the side of his Airstream, so it looks like a roast chicken driving down the highway. This, you know, I set that up like this is going to be some sort of a joke song. It's actually just kind of like it feels like one of those songs where you kind of are cruising down the highway. And so it had that energy, but for some reason I always have this ridiculous image of the roast chicken, the aluminum roast chicken heading down the highway. So,
right. Well, let's hear it. Cruising on down the road with Matthew Friess, and that was a track from Tri-Fi, a tune you wrote called mm-hmm. Airstream. Yeah. If folks just tuned in, we're listening to some tracks with Matthew Friess, who will be recording a live session, two in a row, tomorrow night at Overneath Studios with his longtime friend and musical partner, Phil Polambi, on bass. And we're going to end up here this hour with a track the two of you play on, but a few more things to chat about before we hit that point. So how was your first year teaching university?
What an incredible experience. You know, it was not something I was expecting for myself. You know, the position opened up here and they were kind of putting out feelers for people that they would ask to come and interview.
This was not like part of this life plan.
It wasn't like, I have spent my 23 years in New York City. The next step is to find a wonderful city in the Midwest. And no, it wasn't at all. But when the position opened up and they were kind of tossing around names of people to ask to come and interview, you know, who might be qualified, who would be good to work with. I've been out here so much because of my friend Keith Hall. The faculty all knows me, and my name came up, and Keith Hall asked me about it, and my first reaction was, no, I'm not interested. No, I'm here in New York. I'm doing my thing. And
yeah, you got a good thing going.
Yeah. But then, you know, it's like I sat on it for a little while and was talking with my girlfriend about it, and it was kind of like, you know, we've kind of been talking about how frustrating some things are here in New York. And, you know, we've been, you know, she's born and raised there and I was living there for 23 years and it's just kind of like, well, at some point there's going to be a next step and what is it going to be? And, you know, it was always kind of like, well, I'll probably be moving to a university town where there's, you know, some art and some culture and interesting people. So we just kind of were talking about it. And I was like, well, this is a university town and it's a reason to go there. And I know people and we know what the scene is. And I think I called Keith back the next day. He's like, just don't tell them no just yet. I need to think on this a little bit more. And eventually came around to where I did come out and interview and, you know, officially met everybody and some more of the students that I hadn't met. And they offered me the job for the fall. And it's been an amazing experience, you know.
How large is the studio that you teach? How many students are you?
Let's see. I had I think I had 8 students in the spring semester. I was also teaching a class, jazz theory class, and we started, when I got here in the fall, together with Keith Hall, we started expanded the jazz combo program in the jazz department, basically giving the students an opportunity to form small ensembles and to get to rehearse every week. There was already a class or a process in the music school about like kind of creating small ensembles for classical musicians to be able to play, you know, chamber music repertoire, work with a faculty coach. So we kind of took that and created the jazz version of it, and just kind of put out a cattle call for who wants to be in an ensemble, and kind of threw people together based on what we thought their interests and their levels were, and ended up creating, I think, 8 of these small ensembles who would rehearse every week with the faculty. I had most of them, and Keith had a couple of them. There was also opportunities for them to record in Western Studios on campus there. We created some events for them to perform. We created a couple of concerts down at the Union each semester for the combos to come out and play. And then at the end of the school year, we did a concert on campus in Dalton Center where we had everybody, just, you know, everybody got to play one tune, and it just went for the whole night. So it was pretty exciting to be a part of that whole process, and it was a great way to get to know a whole bunch of students.
Yeah.
Because I just had contact with a whole lot of them every week and was working on things with them. So,
have you? I mean, it's been 1 year, but have you started discovering in yourself through teaching what is most important to you, what your values are as regards this art form, like what you really need to get across to say why we need jazz?
Wow, that's a big question.
Yeah, I've been saving up the questions all week.
That's right. You haven't had any guests this week. You've been saving them up.
Yeah,
saving the whoppers.
It's all philosophical.
No, it's that is something that you kind of wrestle with too, because as a jazz musician, as a jazz artist, you know, there's so many situations where you go and you play and you just aren't appreciated. You know, that it's jazz is kind of thought of as, you know, the background music, or it's the cocktail music. And if you ask somebody to describe jazz, they're probably going to describe what it looks like. They're going to say, oh, it's a saxophone player in a smoky bar. It doesn't have anything to do with what the music actually sounds like. Hmm. You know, it's become such a, in a way, it's become such a cliche. The history of it has. There are people that are kind of taking modern jazz and blending it with other styles and creating a younger movement, which has been really fantastic to see. So there's a little bit of a different spin on it and resurgence that way. For me, you know, there's the history of this music is, you know, it's just so rich with personality. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's really what it's about. There's this depth to the rhythm of it that isn't in other types of music, as far as I'm concerned. We always talk about we always talk about how the quarter note is king, and it's kind of amazing. You hear like a jazz master just playing, you know, maybe a jazz master drummer just playing quarter notes on a ride cymbal. And it is just full of all this other information. And it's like, I don't know how it's in there, but it is. And until you kind of open yourself up and are aware of that as a possibility, you're not going to hear it. So it's kind of a difficult thing to have all of that rich art and information in there that you can't really get it all across. And so you kind of have to wrap it up in a presentable way and in entertainment. So you're always kind of walking that line between originality and entertainment and showmanship and, you know, being true to your art and to the history.
Remind me that Kenny Werner visited the campus this last spring.
What a great experience that was for everyone.
And I believe Billy Hart is coming up in the fall.
Yes. Yeah. Speaking of a couple of jazz masters, yes.
That's exciting.
Yes. And, you know, I mean, and those are two guys that are just so steeped in the music and just are all about the expression of it, and are so powerful that way.
Wow.
You know, and I think that's kind of, I mean, I'm kind of been aware of that for myself and what's important, but it is interesting, and it's very different when you have to try to teach it and you have to try to inspire it, because it's hard to describe and it's hard to pinpoint because it's not just one thing. It's like, oh no, that's an E flat. You're supposed to be playing an E flat, but there's a lot more too. Like,
how to even play all that other stuff.
And then, you know, and then you have students at all different levels and all different, you know, all different musical levels, all different talent levels, all different levels of different places in their lives and what they're open to understanding and, you know, trying to navigate all that. It's a challenge, but it's so wonderful and inspiring coming back, you know.
Gosh. Glad you took it on.
Yeah, me too.
Your reward, I guess, is to get out there and play with friends. And tonight at the Union, that's you with Tri-Five.
Yeah, that's going to be so much fun.
Keith it's Hall and
the
Phil
three of
Palumbi.
Us together, yeah.
And a special recording session at Overneath. Mm-hmm. If for listeners who enjoy the focused listening, the watching two masters put together an album, but in a setting where a lot of the artificiality has been taken away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just going to be you two, one take.
Yeah, and it'll be a mini concert with a very select audience, and we'll have some wine and cheese, and there'll be time before and after the concert to chat about, you know, what did you hear, what's going on, and, you know, why is that microphone there, whatever it is. So yeah. And I'm really excited for, you know, Phil Palumbi has been out here numerous times. It's been a while since he's been in town, since he's been here in Kalamazoo. And so I'm super excited to have him here and for people in town here to get to hear him.
Well, let's give this track a listen that you saved until last. It is from not your album, but Phil's album, mm-hmm. called Detroit Lean. And tell me about this song, Stay the Same.
Well, let's see. Phil decided to record this album kind of as a bass feature record. Detroit Lean. He's from Ohio, Northern Ohio.
He's a gearhead.
Yes, he's a gearhead and from the Rust Belt, and so he's, you know, lots of. I think there might even be a picture of his car in the artwork in there somewhere. But so this tune, I think it was written by his wife actually, and it's just a beautiful. Very lyrical tune, and so you get to hear a lot of sides of Phil. He plays the melody bowed, you know, which, you know, a lot of times a bass player will pull out his bow and you're like, oh no, run for cover. But in this case, it's a beautiful lyrical voice on the instrument, and it's, you know, like I said, we've been playing together for years, and this was, I'm pretty sure this was one or two takes in the studio. It just, you know, let's just play it. And, you know, it just kind of came together as it does when you're friends and colleagues like this.
So. Well, Matthew, thanks for checking in here at WMUK and telling us about your activity and keeping me company.
Thanks so much for having me in.
And have a great weekend with all your music.
Oh, I'm so excited for it. Thank you.
Thanks. Matthew Fries is my guest today. You can find his Facebook page, Matthew Fries is how you spelled Fries, mm-hmm. and Overneath Creative Collective has a Facebook page too with all the details on the KBR sessions at 6 and 8 p.m. tomorrow in downtown Kalamazoo. Thanks again, Matthew.
Thank you. Thank you.